Aranora Renata is on the line. Good morning.
Hi. Atamari Kotoba. Kaitapehia Koto Pai.
Sorry, I interrupted at the wrong time. We've planned a bit here now where Aranoa would explain to me how I can respond to that, because I don't actually know what the best way to respond is. There's always a slight silence while I figure out what to do next. So what should I say in Māori after you've – or tell us what you've said and then tell me what I should say.
I really am sending out a general greeting to those who are listening in, and then I ask the question, how is everybody? Kei te pēr hea koutou. So how are we all doing, you know, this morning? And just having that other connection to them, perhaps just checking in.
Okay.
Of course, nobody can respond and I can't hear any voices out there. But in terms of your response, you can go, ai, tēnā koe, ngaronoa.
Okay, tēnā koe, ngaronoa.
Hi, and this one, kei te ora aho, which means I am well. Kei te ora aho.
Kei te ora aho.
Yeah, beautiful. Which is telling me that you are well. And that's a really important place to be when we say those words in Te Ao Māori, the word ora is not simply to do with your physical well-being. There is an association with that kupu, that word, that you are well on all levels.
Okay.
And that's how Māori see you, you know? Like, oh, cool. So your mental well-being, your spiritual well-being, your emotional well-being, that they're all good. You're all good to go, in that sense. So it's quite a statement.
Right.
It's really important acknowledgement that helps us to connect and breathe and go, oh, that's cool. Oh, wow. you know, more than just an exchange of, oh, you got a sore foot. You know, it's not really talking so much on the physical level only.
Right. Okay. And is it sometimes, if you're saying that in English, it's kind of a formality and say, oh, I'm good, thanks. And actually you might be thinking, well, actually it's Monday morning, or it's Tuesday today, but you know, it's Monday morning and I haven't quite recovered from the weekend. And I mean, do you ever kind of give that sort of detail?
Yeah, I think it as a functional response, when we, in English, doesn't hold any, and for us, you know, in Te Ao, who are speaking in Māori, doesn't hold the same depth of meaning. It just means, oh, yeah. And you're really just dismissing that somebody is actually genuinely asking, kei te pēr hea koe, how are you? You know, wanting probably more to connect with you and genuinely interested in how you are. It is, you know, I mean, it's not uncommon for people to use the phrase, oh, how are you, and sort of look away and walk away as well. I've experienced that and thought, oh, they're not really interested. I had a long story ready for them.
Yeah. I think in English, in our sort of New Zealand culture, you say good thanks and it means I'm ready to get down to business, which is what we're here for. It kind of has a thing like that about it.
Yeah. It has a very different approach behind it, and its intention, and those differences are not necessarily, I would say, understood very well until you start to engage with te reo. And you begin to realise, oh, whoa, I had no idea that kupu or those words embodied so much. Just to welcome somebody, you know, kia ora, is actually to bestow a blessing on a person. When you greet them in that way, you're bestowing wellness on the person you're addressing, and that's quite something.
I think in English there are ways of saying, you know, greeting someone and genuinely asking how someone's doing, but there's a lot of variation around that, and it's context dependent, and this has got very complicated very quickly.
Yes, I think it'd be good for us to return to be more attentive to our intentions behind when we are speaking to each other. I know myself that with the different generations, you know, the communication between a little person, a mokopuna, and an elder, you actually speak differently, and those ways that you communicate, you know, in Māori have a genuine impact on how they feel. They go, oh. You see that relationship and connection can be deepened or just, you know, really, really steady, and they go, oh, you know, response, really happy, positive response. Or you can also, you know, as you know, with you can make someone feel very uncomfortable depending on how you address them.
Yeah.
Depending on the age group that you're speaking to. So, yeah, you know, if you take care with our kupu, kia ora, tēnā koe is a much more formal address. It's more likely that you are addressing them as an equal, tēnā koe. And you might think, oh, that's, you know, they're talking to me, which means like they are very respectful, more formal.
Okay.
You're not likely to do that in a family setting, you know, walk in the whare and say to your mum and dad, oh, tēnā koe. That's quite like, oh, okay. You okay?
You're
addressing me quite formally.
What would you say instead?
Oh, well, you would say kia ora.
Right.
You might have your own little phrase that you use.
Of course, yeah. That's the whole thing.
Kia ora, mama. Fire for female. And papa. Papa, you know, for male, for father. The male and female, yes, fire. Fire, kōka are commonly used also as a term for a female teacher, for instance, you know, whaia whetū would be, you know, really, actually, that's quite a beautiful term as well to address your kaiako in your classroom or an elder female in that manner. You're really addressing them respectfully, to call them whaia. E hoa, of course, is an equal. E hoa is speaking to a friend.
Okay.
You would address them in those ways. So as language does, and the English language is a big language, it's extensive, you have different kupu that you use depending on your relationship with that, whom you're communicating to.
Yeah, as
we know.
All right, shall we move to the what we plan to talk about, which is Indigenous science and its relevant to native plant medicine, and you wanted to talk about it's important to important to understanding our current healing crisis. Yes, I was trying to read an email across the room there.
Yeah, of course. I'd like to perhaps sow a seed here around the fact that Indigenous science is a very real ancient science and has many offerings and many parts to it that can contribute significant benefits to the current healing crisis. I choose to use those words in this setting at this time because that's exactly what we're in my understanding, from an Indigenous scientist point of view. So Indigenous sciences does not sit at the same table, I would say, as Western science, and that to me is not only a shame, but it's also a disappointment on the part of Indigenous people that we don't have that recognition that we have a lot to offer in the journey going forward for the whole nation, for the world, actually, with our way of understanding the dynamics of what we're currently going through as a world. Because we tend to focus on the physical body, which is a very Western science paradigm,
yeah,
which an Indigenous science totally disagrees with, because that's such a limited view of who you really are. And so our relationship, our interconnectedness to all parts of the world that we live in are not only genuine, but they're very much felt by Indigenous people and others. I'm not dismissing that it's not available, it's not felt or sensed or understood by many other cultures at all. But the way that we go forward, it's very important that the Indigenous science sits at the same table and says, hey, hang on a minute, that's the physical body, that's so temporary. This is what we would offer, we have to offer. And I know there are many so-called complementary healing fields. They're not complementary at all. They're mainstream. They actually know and understand intimately what's going on, and they're going, whoa.
And that growth and what was referred to as complementary healthcare has been driven by people just needing something else than the purely...
Complementary is the word given by Western science, because Western science sees itself as the pinnacle.
Yes, yes.
And that's the problem. That is actually the problem, because Western science concentrates on extraction, where other Indigenous science is primarily talks about the wholeness. You cannot separate the breath. You cannot separate it into parts. And that's the one thing that we all share in terms of our life on the earth, is what we call the ha, the life force, the modi.
Yeah.
And that cannot be separated. You either have it or you haven't. You've either got it, you're alive and living and breathing and struggling with breath, the ha, or you're not. You're gone. You're past. You've done your time on the earth. But that's definitely a place that we would have to agree that is, you cannot separate that with a science. You can't take that in the laboratory and pull it apart and say, oh, but we'll take that part of it and we'll extract it and we'll put it into this tincture and we'll use it in this way. No, you cannot do that. We believe in Indigenous science that when you do that, that's it. That's it. It's all over.
So Indigenous science has... I was surprised to learn in the last, I think, year and a half or so that now in universities now with, is it Mātauranga Māori? Is that the phrase I'm looking for?
Yes, Mātauranga Māori.
Yeah.
What did you say?
No, I was just saying, like, there is... that while there's not a seat at the table yet for Indigenous science, it is re-establishing itself, I think.
Yeah, it is. And I think the challenges that we have going forward is when you begin to formalise something and put it within structures, you lose some of the essence of its actual meaning and origins. And as we well know, once you structurise something, some of the goodness that it was breathing and offering has to be put to the side, and that's a really big riddle and challenge for us.
That's that tendency of...
we call it compromising.
Yeah. And that, like, you're talking about the tendency to look at details in mainstream science. And when you go into university, everything gets broken down into its details, into categories. And so if Mātauranga Māori is going to come into universities, they probably expect it to break itself down into categories and things like that. And I guess that's kind of what you're talking about, isn't it?
Yeah, I think when you come under a particular whare, we call it, you know, like under the university system, of which I am a graduate of, and I can remember distinctly thinking, oh, wow, they've got lots of rules and there's lots of ways that they coach you to coaching you, you know, and some of your dearly held beliefs, you know. I remember clearly when we were learning the history of Western education and it was the system that we'd actually been brought up under, I had no idea. And there was a whole group of Māori students who just moved themselves to the side of the lecture theatre and we just wept. We realised, like, oh, my God, we've just come through that. And here we are wanting to be teachers ourselves. What are we going to do? You know, the truth was being told and we were studying it, the science, you know, the history of Western education, and we thought, but this is not us. We have so much more than this.
So what was that that you discovered?
We discovered that we were very, very, we'd been suppressed so much. And we realised that our suppression was real, that it was actually deliberate, and it just made us weep. But having said that, I have to say, from that year, yep. Sharman Coutney was our lead singer, or we'll call her that, at the University of Waikato. We all graduated. And it was the first graduation that was actually held at the local, at the University of Marae, because we refused. We said, oh, well, if we're going to do this, we're going to have something Māori. And we were the first to graduate at Te Ao Marama, Te Kohinga Marama, at the University of Marae in 1991. Oh, there's my age going there. 1991, at the University of Waikato.
Yeah.
And that was our redemption. Okay, if you want us to learn about how we were colonised and that, okay, we got that. Okay, we're going to breathe. Okay, but we're not giving up. So I think we learnt of how suppression happened and colonisation, and we just got on with it. We got on with it because we wanted the key to the classroom doors.
Yeah, right, yeah.
That was the goal. We needed the key and we... And then that was another whole ball game. The key to the tauira. We knew that the tauira were our goal. We wanted to get in there and teach them things that they'd never heard of.
So would you say that the different scientific methods, if we call it from mainstream to indigenous, are intrinsically linked with the culture? You can't separate it from its culture? Or you can't teach it properly without being immersed in the culture?
Yeah, I think that's a very interesting comment going forward, because the other thing that happens to all cultures is they become what we call crystallized, and they become so set in their ways that they cannot breathe to adapt, and that's very dangerous also. So culture has so much beauty to offer, but once it becomes crystallised and it says, no, only Ngāpuhi men can speak on northern... Oops, I told you another... on our marais, and we go, why should you speak for me? I don't want you to speak for me. I've decided I'm actually quite articulate and I'm going to do that. But you can't do that. Then you know that culture doesn't serve its people. Culture is to serve its people. And that requires us to be much more fluid and not contemporary. Contemporary is not really the word. It's to take the essence of what you your culture offers you and say, that will never change. Some things will never change. And one of those is what we call kapua noa, sacred and not sacred, or sacred and there are, you know, tapua noa are essential parts of our culture, Māori culture, but maybe not in Western culture, as it would have been once. So I know people have said, but we used to do that. I said, oh, okay. Oh, okay.
When was
that? So some things get lost as we contemporize, and that's a shame because you lose the essence of beautiful cultural expressions. I mean, look at when wearing masks. Do you remember when masks were like, you can't have any covering on your face because, and I'm thinking, but the whole world's wearing masks.
This thing arrived suddenly and caught everybody by surprise. So that shifts a culture.
Yeah, it shifted a whole cultural sort of thing when it belonged to the Middle Eastern woman, you know, when they're coming of age. And we all thought it was like, oh, yeah, why are they wearing that? And we probably had our own opinions. And now we're all wearing masks. Of course, when I'm not diminishing what that means to that particular culture in the Middle East. I'm just saying, isn't it crazy how we can just go, well, we're wearing masks, you're wearing masks, okay, we're the same, but we're not.
Yeah. So our segment's called Kai Rongoa, which is, explain actually the word again.
So kai is to feed, and rongoa in essence is to do with those aspects of medicine, from a holistic perspective, rongoa is the offering from indigenous science around healing. The offerings of the different forms is miri miri, romi romi, medicinal plants, other karakia is a really big missing aspect, I feel, within. Currently, we could do with a lot more, being a lot more prayerful, is, I guess, in English we would call it, contemplative in a more respectful way, realizing that, you know, and as a kai rongoa embodies that, is saying, well, you know, we need to be more respectful of what we've done to our mother. What mother? My mother's dead. No, well, she nearly is, actually. The earth mother.
Right.
Oh, yeah. You know, in rongoa, when somebody perhaps has a background in Māori, they would say, rongoa, oh, right. They would expect you to be very connected to Papa Tuanuku, the earth mother. And, yes, that aho, that aho, which is that cord, umbilical cord to her, is absolutely essential to a kai rongoa practitioner, that connection.
So with native plant medicine in the context of indigenous science, I guess we look at plant medicine in the Western way has been to analyse the plant and find the ingredient that does the thing we want to do and work at it that way. How does native plant medicine work in an indigenous science perspective?
So the whole approach towards the plant world is completely different. It doesn't belong in a laboratory situation, although it may end up there at some point, to be made into a much finer vibration through a tincture or into a beautiful balm, a panipani infusion and inhalation and a variety of other forms. It understands that the whole plant can offer healing as it is, and also the approach towards the plant is much more respectful. Excuse me. So I'm not saying that Western science doesn't respect plants, but it often doesn't have any protocol within the laboratory around karakia, sacredness of the plant world, the actual Māori of the plant. You know, it's treated as something that you just, you know, you go in the laboratory and you pull it apart and you add things to it, and you you can do that, and that's totally acceptable in the Western science world. In raw Māori, you're more likely to start with taking the plants, taking and understanding the plants or knowing of the plants within the area that you live first. So localizing your knowledge so that you understand where you live. The Waikato plants that I work with currently are not, and I will say that, the plants that I know from the far north, where I am from.
Yeah.
That's a fact, you know, as we know, with the ecosystems that are specific. You know, they often say, oh, the kumaraho from the north. And they say, yes, that's what I work with. I have it sent down in a dried form. So we're more likely to work with dried or plant material that is fresh. We actually know the plants. No, they're not just a botanical name, a label in a plastic bag or in a petri dish. We actually have quite an intimate knowledge of where they grow and who they are. They're like children. You become very familiar with your plant material and why you're using it and when to use it. Whereas in Western medicine, there's no timing as to when you take a medicine. There's no the best time. It's like take with food or with before food. In other in West Indigenous science, there are very specific times when rongoā is ingested for its total benefit, because it has what they call medicinal actions, which fully are activated at different times of a 24-hour cycle, and that's really a very important part of the science of Indigenous science. It has a rhythm that Western science will never have.
So it takes into account the body as well, not just the medicine and what it does, but the body and what it's ready for, I guess?
Oh, absolutely. It has a... if it's the right one, it will do its work immediately. It will have an immediate response. But it's sensed also with a blessing. There's a lot of blessing around rongoā, how rongoā is offered to people. You know, there's a lot of integrity around it. Your relationship as the kai rongoā practitioner and the people that you serve. You are serving your people. No, I'm totally not saying that our Western science doesn't serve its people. It's just got to completely bases its all its, you know, medicine pills on the physical body, which is totally out of tune with what a kai rongoā practitioner would know, would do. It's just not what we how we would approach it, or and never have.
Yeah, and I guess that's reflected in, I guess you call it the chronic health crisis, because Western medicine is fantastic. If you've been in a car accident, it'll put you back together fantastically well, and there's all sorts of things it does that are bordering on miraculous. When my mother had a head injury, I was very grateful for all the technology. But yeah, the more chronic health situations are certainly something we're struggling with at the moment.
Yeah, I think we're struggling with it because we've actually been having bad practices as a human family and thinking we're getting away with it. And not only are we in, like you say, chronic and dying, but the earth is. And we would say once you recognise that, then you must also acknowledge your interdependence. That when she is well, when your mother is well, you will be well. So how do you turn that story around? you know, the way we talk to each other, the vibration of our thoughts when we send them out into the each day. Those all have, in Te Ao Māori, in Indigenous science, we say that's where the medicine is. It's not only in the forest. It's in the human family, in our desires to heal our mother. Oh, you know, I mean, we actually have to put our hand up and say, we poisoned you. We actually did that, you know, unconsciously or consciously, but we are responsible for the condition of our mother. So why would we be well if she is not? So I say we're looking in the wrong place. We actually need to look at healing her, and then we will heal as a human family.
So yeah. this kind of interconnectedness, I feel like the current pandemic is kind of revealing that to a degree, in the sense that is that the government's like, okay, we've got to go and, for instance, talk to the gangs to try and get them on board with the health message. And some people are like, oh, you can't do any favors for the gangs. And it's kind of like, well, the virus doesn't care. It'll go for everybody it can. And we all get, and if the gangs get sick, then we'll get sick as well. Like, you can't exclude anyone, which we're kind of used to doing in modern culture. So, I mean, do you feel like that?
Yeah, we're picking up on and realizing. I'm hopeful that we are actually realizing we are interconnected, you know, that the benefits of this desire to make contact, let alone anything else that's being offered within that space, is actually a genuine desire and acknowledgement of like, oh yeah, we've got to think about you as well, you who we don't really know and actually not sure if we even like you, and oh yeah, gosh, how are we going to contact you, you know, we don't have any connection with as such, and now these connections are being made, finding ways to connect with each other is a really important link in our disconnection. And for us to go, oh, okay, one earth.
Yeah.
One earth, we're all on the same planet. And this taniwha has come in and it's got no manners.
That's such a good way to put it.
And it's not saying, oh, we'll just target them over there, okay, you know, because they wear, what colour are they wearing? You know, that kind of thing. It's like, oh, when did you know that the earth was interconnected, you know? Kai Rongo will say, yeah, we know that. We know that everyone's affected. This is why we practice Kai Rongo, because of the interconnectedness is so essential to all of us, not just the privileged so-called hierarchy of people. You know, you can be immune from it. I don't think so. I mean, good luck, but if he's, at some point, someone in your whānau, whether you've got $1 million or $1,
yeah,
that taniwha's going to have no manners. And I think that's our disconnection is we think we're immune. Oh, yeah, I'm okay. You know, that immunity.
Yeah.
It's our lack of connectedness. It's showing our lack of interconnectedness.
So there's lots of, in the Western world at the moment, I mean, there's lots of people talking about, you know, we've got to absorb these concepts of interconnectedness and it's one planet and that sort of thing. A lot of people are aware of that, but I suspect that the values of the culture about seeing the earth as a resource are so embedded in the culture that it's actually quite hard. It would be quite hard to change it. You can't just, like, we're probably not even aware of all the ways that we've absorbed that message that the earth is a resource.
That's straight out materialism.
yeah. So I'm wondering,
treating her as a resource, which is was dangerous right from the beginning. She's not a resource. She never has been. Papa Tuanuku is our mother. some things actually need to stay in the earth. You know, all this drama around mining and the Kimberleys, and it's such a sad story and a legacy that we leave for our future. We think that we can take whatever we like whenever we like. Well, you know, this is what we call tapu. Some things are just meant to stay where they are. And people go, but why? And we just say, why not?
So that's, you know, that's the thing, a different cultural perspective.
It is. It's totally, you know, I just really feel for our whanaunga in the Kimberleys and in parts of Australia, you know, Te Papaka Nui a Māori. And I think, how can you not see that you are killing your mother, our mother, and that she's not going to handle it much? Not, well, she isn't handling it very well at all. In fact, that's why she's crumbling. And she will destroy all the minds that you have created because she can't cope. And why don't you get that, you know? Why don't we get it? Because we're greedy. We're not only greedy, but we're very materialistic.
And that's in the culture. Yeah, and that's in the culture. And I'm wondering how a culture learns new values like that, and whether it's, do you learn it through a language? Like, do we, here in New Zealand, Aotearoa, do we learn Māori and become bilingual and absorb different values into our mainstream culture? Is that how we do it?
Absolutely. The opportunity for us to embrace a culture that has some very beautiful practices is a win for everybody. Everybody can, you know, share in a brighter, more sustainable. We're looking about sustaining, you know. You know, Kevin was all about speaking for the ocean when the ocean couldn't speak for itself. And who did that? We did that, you know?
Yeah.
We're capable. And why did we do that? Because we may not see the benefits of our story and the way that it unfolded, but our future generations will, and that's got to be good for the earth. So we benefit from being interculturally connected. And learning the language is a very good way of doing that process, beginning that process, and learning about some of those values that are just dearly held, that are for all the right reasons, you know.
Do you need to be fully bilingual to really absorb those values, do you think?
No. I think you have to have a genuine desire to be interested and take a genuine back seat. Sometimes it's also about not talking, not speaking, and letting other people speak their truth because they have a different way of speaking it. That's been a great lesson to learn. It's one of the things I learned in my culture, was sometimes people don't all speak the same way, and you just have to give them time, you know. But if you're always talking, how will they be heard? I go, oh, yeah. And that's a quality that I've found amongst my elders. A quality?
Yeah.
They're very good listeners. You, after an hour, they can go, yep, I heard everything you said. Oh, kia ora. and you go, oh, do you want to comment? And they go, No, I just heard everything you said.
It's a bit different.
You know, and that's a beautiful thing. They were listening.
Yeah.
Listening to people is a great gift. And I think culturally, one of the things that Māori understand, we do have a practice around that. Listening. And becoming quite upset too.
We don't have a culture in modern leadership of the leaders listening.
Yeah, I mean, you listen to them for not even 10 seconds and anger builds up. It's true, you know. Let's face it. And you think, wow, that was powerful. They really made me angry now. There's also a way of speaking to people so you're heard, and that's another gift of whaikōrero, or the way that you're taught to speak so you are listened to is something you can, you know, receive training in the reo. And I know my knowledge of that or background in that. When my father would speak, he would stand and then he would begin to speak and I would weep. And I would go, oh, my gosh, every time he opens his mouth, I feel a connection straight away. He straight away connects to something inside me that makes me weep, and not sadness, just beauty. I felt that he had a lot of beauty in what, because I was included in the words that he was speaking. Not me personally. He didn't say ngaro no, ngaro no, but I felt the connection of his words with, and I thought, oh, how can I speak like that? How can I, people, I thought, Papa, I'm weeping. Why? And that's because he knew the connection to the human family through words at another level. He didn't waste his words.
Yeah.
He wasn't a man to waste his words. And he could talk. My father, Nikki. Okay.
So we've strayed from our original task. But that's all right. It's because everything is connected, isn't it? And it's inevitable.
It's inevitable.
Yeah.
Ah,
folks, we've been talking to Ngaranoa Renata, and Kairongoa is the segment wandering far in different subject areas, but yeah, all connected. So thank you for your time this morning.
Yeah, beautiful.
And where can people go if people want to follow up something here? Maybe Matauranga Māori, Indigenous science, and how and what's happening in that area. Where can people go for that?
Well, the Te Wānanga o Aotearoa are definitely working on along those lines, that's for sure. The Indigenous University here in Aotearoa.
Okay.
And there's Te Wānanga o Awanuiarangi as well. Mm.
Okay, all right. Well, people can check that out. That's a good place to start.
Think of all the other lists that I've got here.
Yeah, I'm sure there's endless resources these days. But that's enough for now, Ngaranoa. Thank you for your time. And we'll talk to you again in a couple of weeks. I'd love it if you're in the studio next time, but I guess we'll just see how we go.
Awesome. Let's plan for that.
Yeah, I think we said that last time, but anyway, we'll see how we go.
Follow the flow like water.